another helicopter showed up with a swimmer who was a good friend of mine at the time, and they hoisted him down, and then we saved these guys together. You know, all went up, and you know, we got into the clown car, we all packed in, and brought them home. So it was a good day. You know, everybody lived, and you got to, I got to like actually do a case where one of my friends came and picked me up, which was pretty cool.
Welcome to Behind the Stays, a podcast that shares the stories behind your favorite Airbnbs, boutique hotels, and hospitality brands, and the hosts, operators, and entrepreneurs who have brought them to life. Every Tuesday and Friday, you'll meet the military veterans, the retired flight attendants, tech entrepreneurs, the school teachers, the single moms, and the real estate investors who are all, in their own unique ways, shaping the future of travel and hospitality. Discover how these visionaries from all over the world have built chic cabins in the mountains, designed bohemian bungalows on the beach, erected eclectic off-grid and nature-immersed escapes, and so much more. Behind the Stays is brought to you by Spontaneous, the internet's best destination for last-minute Airbnb deals. You can subscribe for free at spontaneous.com. And I'm your host, Zach Buzzi-Cruz, co-founder and CEO of Spontaneous. All right, friends, enjoy the show. So a buddy and I were chatting about the future of hospitality the other day, and one of the resounding themes that we just like kept coming back to was the idea that highly curated and original experiences are the new luxury when it comes to travel, right? Like everyone wants something bespoke, everyone wants something unique. Now, not everyone can design like an Instagram-worthy Airbnb or build like a truly unique stay on like the perfect parcel of land, but every hospitality entrepreneur can deliver a unique, one-of-a-kind experience for guests. And the truth of the matter is that you can't provide these sorts of experiences at scale without digital guidebooks, which is why I'm super excited to tell you a little bit about my new friends at Hostfully. Hostfully digital guidebooks are the easiest way to help your guests get to know your property and discover just how special the community that surrounds it is. Hostfully guidebooks give you a dynamic place to store every bit of information you might want your guests to have, from the Wi-Fi password to how to work the hot tub to where to take the best selfies at golden hour. That's one of my favorites, actually, so be sure you do that if you don't already. Hostfully empowers you with easy-to-use tools that help you feature a totally curated list of your favorite eateries, pubs, hiking trails, and more. Or Hostfully can automatically create a list of experiences through their guidebook wizard if you've got dozens of properties and just can't afford to curate a custom set of recommendations for each one. But here's where things get even more exciting. You guys listening? You sure? Listening. All right, cool, listen up. You can create a marketplace within Hostfully guidebooks that enables you to sell things like early check-in, late checkout, airport transfers, a custom romance package, kayak rentals, etc. Your guests can purchase these add-ons directly through your guidebook before or during their stay, which enables you to make a little extra cash money. All right. I know what you're thinking, right? You're like, Zach, this all must cost an arm and a leg, right? But that's where you'd be wrong, friends. If you're just starting out on your hospitality entrepreneurial journey and have just one property, your first guidebook is totally free. If you have multiple properties, it's also super affordable. For example, it costs just $25 a month for up to 5 properties. But if you use the discount code BTS at checkout, you can get 2 free months for any Hostfully guidebook subscription. Again, that's BTS as in Behind the Stays. So if one of your goals this year is to try to up your guest experience game, there's really no reason to not give Hostfully a try. Head on over to hostfully.com/BTS, that's BTS as in Behind the Stays, to learn more about Hostfully guidebooks. Again, that's hostfully.com/BTS, and be sure to use the discount code BTS at checkout. And if you talk to the team there, tell them that Zach from Behind the Stays sent you their way. In just a moment, you'll meet Cameron Weeks, a former Coast Guard rescue swimmer turned hospitality entrepreneur. From a young age, Cameron dreamed of owning his own business. He used to listen to audiobooks like Rich Dad, Poor Dad with his father in the car when he was in elementary school. After high school, Cameron enlisted in the Coast Guard and became a rescue swimmer. Yes, like one of those guys who jumps out of helicopters to save people stranded in the middle of the ocean. In this conversation, Cameron shares his story of leaving the Coast Guard to pursue his entrepreneurial dreams, how he grew his short-term rental co-hosting business on Tybee Island from zero to $1.3 million in just 12 months, and what he's learned about the value of building a boutique management company in a vacation destination. All right, friends, without further ado, get ready to meet Cameron. All righty, Cameron, we are live. Good sir, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me, man. I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I was just telling you offline that my wife and I just had our second kid, and this one was way easier than the first one in terms of just adjusting to the whole sleep thing. And, you know, we're just already so sleep deprived that it's like, you know, throw a newborn in there. And it's just
makes me feel better.
Yeah. It's just
the second one, because we're 9 months into our first. So,
okay. Yes. Congratulations. Yeah. That's exciting. So, you know, I'm in good company of like sleep deprived dad. So, you know,
you don't realize until you're in it.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You don't. One of the things I was talking to a friend of mine about the other day, I was like, all the like, you know, self-help bros, like productivity bros on like, you know, Twitter or Instagram. I've like unfollowed like anybody that's not like a parent at this point, because I'm like, okay, you can do your cold plunges, you can do your 4 a.m. wakeouts, you know, workouts, you know, all that stuff. And if you're a dad, you know, and a parent, like, I have so much more respect for you. And if you're not, quite frankly, like, bro, sorry, I've graduated from that.
So
phase.
Easy to be in like a good routine without a kid.
I know it is. It's like, I, you know, meditated for 2 hours, and then I, you know, went for a, you know, an hour and a half jog, and I'm like, dude, yeah. Dude, you know, I wish, and yet, right. Like as somebody who does care about like, you know, performance and, you know, doing my best to do well in life. I've just, you know, started following and like subscribing to people that like are dads, and not just like, you know, passive dads, but people that are like, want to be good dads. Right. But also want to build businesses, and also want to like, you know, stay fit and all that stuff. And so it's funny, the different stages of life that you go through. Yeah.
I got a cold plunge on the deck right here.
Oh, there you go. Okay, well, I got to come out there. I have still never done a cold plunge. I feel like I'm like, yeah, just like not like a real like internet guy, since I've never done one. But
well, I was doing them before they were cool.
Oh, were you? Okay.
I was always into it. As like, me and my friends, we grew up in New York.
Okay.
So we used to like go into the Hudson River in the wintertime, and like,
so we were like a real cold plunge.
Yeah, we're like, this makes us feel so good. Like, it almost feels like you get a drug or something. And then, you know, as it went on, like, I really liked ice baths, and now it's like this huge thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah. I grew up in Hawaii. So, the water was warm and not cold. So I'm a little, I'm not quite ballsy enough to do that. But like at the same time, I've always wanted to just do the cold plunge thing, because it's just such a thing. And I totally believe, like, I do like the cold shower thing here and there. Right. And it's, you know, similar effect, right. You walk out and you just like feel like you just had a bunch of coffee, except you feel a little more stable, 'cause you're not jittery. And it is an amazing feeling.
'Cause your body's telling you like you almost died. So you get just like, you know, I think that's what it is.
Yeah. Where in Hawaii
did you grow up?
I grew up in Kailua, which is on the, like the eastern side of Oahu.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me and my wife were in Oahu in 2017. We were out there.
Oh, cool, man. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. It's what I tell people all the time is like, it's a beautiful place to visit. From my perspective, it's like a hard place to live. There's just not a lot of opportunity there. And, you know, you go back to my hometown, Kailua, and like, it looks exactly the way it did when I was like five. Right. Like, really? There's just not a lot of change and not a lot of progress. And some people really like that. I am not one of those people. I do like change. I do like progress. So
where are you at now?
DC. So okay. Yeah, quite different from my island rearing. But but this definitely fits a little bit more of my vibe. But we could talk about me and us and cold plunging all day. But I really want to dive into our conversation about what we're really here to talk about, which is short-term rentals and the cool stuff that you're doing with your co-hosting business, how you and your wife have kind of scaled this really awesome business in a relatively short period of time. But one of my favorite things to do, Cameron, just to help give the audience a little bit of a sense of who you are, is to ask folks that come on the show, if I were to have met you as a 10-year-old, if I were to ask you like what you wanted to be when you grew up, like what would you have said? Like, what did Cameron as a 10-year-old want to be?
So it was always business, like something in business. And it wasn't like a certain business. It was just anything with money I was always into, like from a very young age. I remember reading, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, a couple, maybe when I was like 13. And then, you know, the classic Think and Grow Rich. Napoleon. I remember my dad used to play that for me on like an audio in the car. And that like really stuck with me. So like from an early age, I was just like, there has to be a better way, you know, than just working a normal job. Like, you know, because people are really out there doing this. And it just, it, those books sounded like magic to me. I was like, I can't believe you can actually, you know, take money and like keep making money. And there's other ways to make money when you're sleeping. And that was where I was at 10 years old. It was always some kind of business, no matter what it was. And well, then obviously I ended up doing a little bit of a different road later on, but it was always in the back of my head. So I remember hearing those audiobooks and like just truly believing that it was like magic, like listening to, you know, because, and it was crazy because this guy was, I think it was like the early 1900s, and he was talking about, you know, manifestation and these different things and like actually thinking, you know, when you think that you can become rich, like you really can become rich. And so that stuck with me for a while. And I was always just looking into different ways of making money, whether it was business, but real estate really like spoke out to me. And for a long time, it was never anything short-term rental. It was always like, you know, buying long-term real estate and, you know, the how you can, your cash flow is tax-free, your appreciation, your depreciation, like all these crazy benefits. I was just like, wow, that's cool. And then it's something like, you know, 90% of millionaires in the United States like own real estate. So I was like, you know, it has to be the way to go.
Dude, you were a pretty mature 10-year-old then. I mean, like, I don't remember exactly what I was listening to as a 10-year-old, but I don't think I was listening to, you know, Rich Dad Poor Dad on an audiobook. And I think that that's just, it's pretty impressive that like at a pretty young age you were interested in this. Like it was intriguing and motivating to you. You then end up going into the Coast Guard at some point later on, right? Hopefully you were a little bit older than 10 and you had like a crazy, like, I don't know, like a pretty strange job for the Coast Guard. You were a rescue swimmer. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. So I was a Coast Guard rescue swimmer. They're also referred to as aviation survival technicians.
Wow.
Yeah, so as I got a little older, you know, some guys are scared to admit, but I saw the movie The Guardian. And I don't know if you've ever seen the movie.
Yes.
And it just stuck with me, and I was like, man, that is freaking cool.
That's a great movie. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Yeah.
So I was like, I want to do that.
Wow.
And all throughout high school, it was just like I joined the swim team. I was just 100% laser focused on like learning how to swim and then joining the Coast Guard and making this happen.
Wow.
That's what I ended up doing. So, you know, a year after graduating high school, I joined the Coast Guard. And what happens is, you go to boot camp in Cape May, you graduate. And then I was actually part of this new program. It's called the Type 2 program, where, you know, you tell them that, hey, I'm joining because I want to be a rescue swimmer. Rescue swimmers are in need. Mm. You know, they have trouble getting people through the school. And they actually kept us in Cape May for, I think I was there for 9 months.
Wow.
And all your only job is to work out and just try to get ready for the school. Wow. Everyone's there and you're with a whole group of guys and you're all training for the same goal. And then I think 9 or 10 months later, I shipped out to rescue swimmer school, which is a 6 month long, you know, kind of beat down in Elizabeth City, North Carolina.
Okay. What does this actually, so you guys would get deployed, like if there's somebody like literally like stranded in like lifeguard 3.0.
Yeah. You're a higher level lifeguard for sure. You're lifeguarding out of a helicopter. So we have the capability of, in our airframe, we could go up to about 100 miles out in the ocean, you know, and we could jump out of the helicopter, get hoisted down to a boat, different medevacs, things like that. We're also EMTs.
Wow.
You know, we're carrying med kits, and then we could also actually stay on scene with the survivor as well. So
wow, I've never outside of seeing The Guardian, right? Like I've never met somebody that did something like this. This is wild. So were there any like crazy stories? Like, do you have any like crazy story you could share with us?
Yeah, I have a couple crazy stories, but a good one is. So this is one of my last cases before I actually got out, and it was pretty memorable. We got a call. We were actually on a training flight, so it was pretty lucky. We were in the area, and we got a call. You know, someone came, Mayday, They were driving a sailboat up from Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And they had actually struck a sandbar and it put a hole into their boat and they were kind of masted over. And it was like 5 miles offshore.
Okay.
But it was, you know, the seas were ripping pretty good. And then we show up on scene. It was a big sailboat. It was like probably 50 feet. They hoist me down and the way the sailboat is kind of just leaned over, like, and the current is just ripping around here. Like the current's like definitely humbled me down in the Southeast for sure. And, it was too sketchy of a situation for me to actually climb onto the boat just with the current. The current was actually trying to pull me under the boat.
Jeez.
So I radioed back up. The helicopter hoisted me back up again. And they swung me down to the sailboat. I land on the sailboat and there's two guys, which I assume they were from Puerto Rico because they didn't speak barely any English.
Wow. You know,
they're just like super wide eyeballed, like scared. And I noticed they don't have any life jackets on.
Jeez.
And I know we're getting in the water because I got to get them in the water and get them up to the helicopter. And, you know, one of the biggest things they grain into your head in swimmer school is like flotation.
Yeah.
You know, you want to make sure everyone has flotation because if someone goes in that water and, you know, if you got multiple survivors and you can't take care of everyone, like someone's going to drown. So anyway, I notice first I go down into the sailboat because I'm like, hey, where are your life jackets? I'm like kind of looking around in the sailboat. I'm kind of like up to here in water. It's like typical scene and, you know, it's getting sketchy. The sailboat's masting all over the place. And then they're pointing and what happened is when the sailboat flipped over, a bunch of batteries had fallen onto the compartment.
Yeah.
The life jacket compartment. So we couldn't get them.
Jeez.
Then we find a raft and, you know, I'm like, oh great. There's a raft on the front of the sailboat. And this isn't like this is like the funny part of the story. Cause if you've ever been to a beach town and you know, like those little like Explorer 500s.
Yeah.
That you buy at the gas station. That was their raft. And I was like, are you kidding? In the middle of the ocean right now, we have this like, it literally like the one that you
like blew it up.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. No, it was already blown up. Like they blew it up and had it tied to the sailboat.
Oh my God.
So I was
like,
screw it. I whipped out my knife. I cut this thing and I basically loaded these guys into this Explorer and just kind of like pushed them.
Jeez.
Like down the sailboat. They're in the water. Then at this point, you know, I don't even realize, but the helicopter's just leaving.
Jeez.
And what happened is they ran out of fuel because we were already at a training flight.
Oh my gosh.
Go do this because these guys were in trouble. They dropped me off. And then, so now basically me and these guys are just sitting in the middle, you know, in the middle of the ocean. You know, I have them both on the Explorer. One guy's holding on, one guy's in it, in this little Explorer, and we're just kind of hanging out. And they're like, hey, we're sending another helicopter for you.
Jeez.
And it wasn't too long, maybe like 20 minutes later. Another helicopter showed up with a swimmer who was a good friend of mine at the time, and they hoisted him down, and then we saved these guys together. You know, all went up, and, you know, we got into the clown car. We all packed in and brought them home. So it was a good day. You know, everybody lived, and I got to like actually do a case where one of my friends came and picked me up, which was pretty cool.
Dude, that is so wild. And like, I can't imagine the adrenaline, right? Like when you guys get back up, you're being hoisted back into the helicopter. These guys are like, oh my gosh, we thought we might die. Like you know, you guys were like, the helicopter was flying away. Right? Like you're like, what the hell? I mean, you just must have this just insane like rush. It must be even like hard to describe.
Yeah, I remember like sometimes you're just getting like hoisted up and you're just screaming like so pumped. Like, it's awesome. It becomes like a crack pipe. Like it's an addiction.
I bet, man. Dude, fun. I mean, I'm glad that there are people like you out there. And hey, just shout, like it sounds like we got to promote this craft. I'll call it a craft, right? Like we need more people doing this stuff because if I'm ever on a sailboat and I get crushed by a sandbar, I really want there to be a Cameron to come save me. And it sounds like these jobs aren't quite in demand, which I understand why, but we need more great swimmers like you.
The problem is, you know, there a lot of people join the Coast Guard and want to do it and then they get to school and, you know, they decide it's not for them. So we need people that are willing to get through the school, you know.
We just got to start like, you know, making the Guardian cool again and just like having, I'm going to go show it to my sons, right? I'm going to be like, guys, what? Actually, no, my wife would kill me. She would not want them to do this, but like, you know, get people pumped about watching the Guardian. We need the Guardian 2.0 movie to come out for like the next generation. Yeah. last minute cancellations suck. And that's why we built Ping. Ping makes it easy for guests to be notified when their favorite Airbnbs become available. Ping is a simple widget that lives on your website or your direct booking site and allows your fans and followers to sign up and be notified if their preferred dates become available. Here's how it works. Jimmy sees that you're booked the whole month of October, but he wants to be notified if any three-night window in the month becomes available. Jen is a returning guest, and she wants to be notified if any week in June, July, or August becomes available. In a matter of seconds, Jimmy and Jen fill out the simple form, and they will be pinged if the requested dates become available. And as a host, you will immediately get pinged via email with Jimmy and Jen's contact information and requested dates, which enables you to build up your own database of guest email addresses. Ping is what the best Airbnb hosts use to maximize bookings. You can get access to our beta pricing with plans that start at just $39 a year at bnbping.com. Again, that's bnbping.com. I want to hear a little bit about the inspiration behind Lighthouse Vacation Rentals. So you started this company, a vacation rental management company, and you guys grew very quickly, and you grew from like $0 to over $1 million in just 12 months in revenue. Yep. By, I believe it was mostly co-hosting. I think you guys own a couple of properties yourselves, but can you
we have one property, two units.
One property. Okay, cool. So tell us a little bit about like the story here. Like, so you decided to like leave the Coast Guard and then start a vacation rental management company. Like, yeah. Connect the dots for us.
So the story is we buy our first house, like 20 minutes from the beach. It's pretty cool. You know, you're nervous buying your first house. Use my VA loan, no money down. This was 2020 or like late 2019. And that 2020 boom just happened. And we're like, holy crap. Like, we're sitting on $100,000 in equity.
Yeah.
And me and my wife, you know, we were just starting to hear like Airbnb is cool. People are making a lot of money doing it, blah, blah, blah. And the real estate bug's kicking in the back of my head. Like, let's buy a multifamily home on a beach.
Yeah.
Live in one unit and rent out the other. And I'm like, if I can live for free, that's awesome, right? Yeah. Even if you can cut your housing expense down, like, that's great. So I end up pulling off this crazy loan. You know, I was making like $48,000 at the year, and then we got approved for we paid total, it was $705 for the duplex on the beach. And
wow.
You know, what we did was that part of the VA loan, you can use the income of the other units to offset your DTI.
Wow.
So anyway, the whole crazy story with that, I had to go through like five different lenders before I even found someone. Got that done, moved into one of the units. We were renting out the other unit. And it was just a crazy story because, you know, like, everyone's telling me not to do it. Like, it's too much of a risk. There's no way. Like, what are you going to do with this mortgage payment? Like, the mortgage payment is literally more than I was making the Coast Guard at the time. Like,
yeah.
If Airbnb shuts down, I'm screwed. And I was like, no way. Like, let's take the risk and do it. Shout out to my wife too, because like, I was like almost about to back out, and she was like, no, calm her down. Let's get this done. And I'm glad I did, because not only, you know, it started off a little shaky at first. We bought it in a 1 year, and then all of a sudden in like March, you know, that bottom unit was not only covering our mortgage, we were making a little bit of money.
Wow.
And that first year, we were just not only cutting our housing expense, but we were just slowly like cash flowing all year. And then I was like, all right, screw it. Let's move out the next year and then rent out the whole thing. So we did that for a year. And then that year we made, I think it was $160,000 in top line revenue on a two unit, 1400 square foot total on this place.
So
like, you know, we're on to something like with this location and kind of adding a little bit of more modern strategies, good service, a good product, dynamic pricing. I mean, now I'm talking about your world, you know all about that. And what I've noticed is a lot of the other management companies are not doing any of that.
Yeah.
So it was really easy to like stand out. And, you know, I start looking into like, hey, you know, these companies, like everyone's using a company, like not many people are doing it by themselves.
Yeah.
These companies are taking 20% of the gross revenue.
Yeah.
Like, it's not taking that much of my time to run this unit. Like, why don't I try another one? So I started calling around, and I ended up calling a sign of like a vacant building.
Okay.
That was for lease. Cause I had the idea. I was on arbitrage in my head. I wanted to do arbitrage.
Yeah.
And I asked the guy, I said, hey, would you be willing to lease this vacant unit to me? And I'll furnish it and put it on Airbnb. And he was like, no, but I like the way you think. And I have some other units. And he gave me a couple units to start.
Wow.
Okay. So that was my first like land. It almost happened accidentally, but like it was perfect timing. And I was still active duty at the time.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So, and just back up just a little bit here. So I want to hear, because, you know, there are people that listen to the show who have, you know, incredible, really cool units, very unique spaces. We've got people that have awesome, like massive, more traditional portfolios. Mm-hmm. And then we've got folks who literally have nothing, right? Like they, and they want to get into this business. They want to, right. You know, they're like 10-year-old Cameron, right? They want to do something other than the traditional path. And they don't really know where to start, right? And we haven't talked much about like co-hosting on this show, to be honest, because most of the people that we've brought on are just they're playing a slightly different game, right? But I think that this is an incredible way for people to get started if they want to build a hospitality brand, if they want to build a hospitality business, right? And so I want to hear a little bit about how when you were going and calling, were you going on Airbnb and just like looking at places around where you guys were? Were you literally just driving around town? Like how did you even know who to call?
So the island's really small, right?
Okay.
And I was looking on Airbnb. Like I was just becoming obsessed with like this business because I was making so much on the two units.
Yeah.
But I was like, what are these other places making? Like, am I just like knocking it out of the park, or is everyone making this much money? And what I noticed is a lot of people on their listings is like, if they had crappy photos, if they weren't using dynamic pricing, if they just had a set rate and they were getting way booked out for like, you know, months in advance for way less than they should be making, leaving money on the table. I was like, either send those people a message on Airbnb or find the property. Like I would literally like go on Airbnb. The island's so small, I would like know where it was. So then I would go over there. I would, like I'd be like walking my dogs, or I would go drive around, and I would write down the address, skip trace, and then send them a text message or phone call.
Wow. Amazing. So you were hardcore hustling.
I was hustling for sure. Yeah. And now that I think about it, it's so easy because I didn't have a kid.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's a little tougher. Yeah. So then you guys grow like very quickly. Like you grow from you know the unit that you and your wife were renting out in your duplex to then I think it was like 39 units roughly you guys are at now. Like yeah, so talk to us about
41.
41.
We have 2, 3, 4 that we're onboarding right now, like guaranteed this year. So we'll be at 45. My goal is to be at 70 by the end of the year.
Jeez. Okay. And is it just you and your wife, or how are you doing?
So me and my wife are the main drivers. We have 2 virtual assistants.
Okay.
And then we have our dream team of like, so I have a plumber, an HVAC guy, 2 handyman men, and then a runner. And when I say runner, that's someone for like I'll pay them on a case by case of like, hey, you got to bring a couple light bulbs over here. You got to run down to the hardware store and grab, go refill their propane, something like that. This, that, that third. But what's cool about what for me in the beginning is like everything was just within 5 minutes from me.
Yeah.
So it was a really cool way to like keep everything dense and easy to manage because the furthest house from me was 5 minutes away. So when I didn't have that team built up at first, it was just me like running around constantly.
Yeah. On that note, so one of the things that some people have challenges with is like, all right, like if you're managing, you know, 10, 15, 20 properties all within a 5 minute radius of each other, like are they competing against each other? Sort of, kind of, like how do you manage it? Like, I know that you guys are using dynamic pricing, but you know, is there concern from the owner's perspective of how many quote unquote competitors, right? you're also managing, or is that like a lot? Is that just less of a concern than people might think?
I think that's definitely less of a concern. It's an interesting question for sure. I've never gotten that question from any owners, but we also, you know, the island we live on, it's just a tourist town.
We get,
don't quote me on this, but it was, I think like 4 or 5 million visitors in 2022.
And it's a very small island.
Yeah. And then we have a little over 2,000 active short-term rentals. We have some hotels. a little over 2,000 active short-term rentals, and then some bed and breakfast.
Okay.
Commercial zoning. But, you know, at 40 with 2,000 rentals, I mean, we're not even tapping into, what is that, 2% of the market share?
Yeah. Yeah.
We still got a long way to go.
Yeah. So I want to hear a little bit about co-hosting and your perspective now that you're a couple years in here. You've scaled very quickly. You've learned a lot. You've built a small team. You are tapping into virtual assistants and also just this, you know, this basically on-demand help as needed. What are some things that like might surprise people about a co-hosting business? Because I think like arbitrage got a really bad like rep over the last couple of years with, you know, the big like Airbnb boom and just everybody, it seemed like everybody and their mother was getting into short-term rentals. You know, we've seen over the last like year and some change that a lot of people have gotten out, right? People spent too much money. They you know, overspent on some places. They didn't realize how hard it is to run a hospitality business. Yeah. They thought it was passive, right? There were all these gurus talking about how easy it was to be a millionaire on Airbnb and all this stuff, right? And today I think the arbitrage, I just see fewer arbitrage people out there like that are that people take seriously. Whereas, yeah. right, co-hosting, I think seems to be having a moment, and people seem to be much more like honest and real as co-hosts, saying like, hey, this is tough work, this is a business, but this is how I do it, like this is how I make money. And it is quite frankly a much more believable quote-unquote strategy than I think arbitrage dudes were propagating. So tell us a little bit about like co-hosting as a business. Like what has surprised you about it? What's something that you don't think enough people talk about with respect to building a co-hosting business?
So probably just the, you know, you're talking about the arbitrage gurus like selling this dream to people, right? And it's like, this is arbitrage can work, right? But it's not, there's so many problems. We could talk about that forever. That can come up in the arbitrage world of like, you know, getting sued and landlords getting pissed and this and that. And I mean, it's just, you know, them outlawing it there. And then you're also, it's more of an investment too. Like you're risking, you know, you just bought all this furniture and you deposit it and now you're renting this place and blah, blah, blah. Co-hosting, you're providing value to someone. So that you really are providing value. Like there's a reason that this industry is massive and they pay 15 to 35, I've even seen 40% management fees.
Yeah.
I mean, 25 is pretty much the standard. You know, we stick at 20, but it's a real business. I mean, I would compare it to starting an HVAC or a plumbing business or like, something like that. Like it is a real business and you know, it's a lot of work in the beginning and it can be a grind for sure. But it's very lucrative too, because a lot of it is done electronically. You can set up your teams. But yeah, I guess. And what was your question again? I'm sorry.
Just what do you think people don't talk enough about with respect to co-hosting business? Or like, is it, what's been harder than you thought and, or what's been easier than you thought about started?
Customer service is what sets people apart in this business. I mean, you're in the hospitality business, so you're graduating from like long-term real estate or like that passive income of like every stay is, you know, it's a new job. Like these people checked in, they're going to be needing something. You got to be ready to take care of them. Like stuff's always going wrong with the units because there's a lot more wear and tear and you're constantly doing turns. You know, managing your cleaners is a big thing too.
Yeah.
You got to keep them accountable and really look around for a good cleaning team. Cause that is really what sets apart these companies is like their cleanliness and quality.
Yeah. For sure.
And then that's going to lead to reviews and reviews are going to lead to revenue. And that's probably something that people don't talk about enough is how important that stuff is.
When you think about the bigger players in the space, right? We've seen a number of companies, I'll just pick on like Vacasa, for instance, right? Who've tried to kind of build and scale this like national property management, national like vacation rental management brand, and have quite frankly struggled to do so. At least
you broke up on me for a second. You said you were going to name a few companies.
Oh yeah. And so Vacasa, for
Vacasa,
Vacasa, for instance, right? Like we've seen these companies try to build and scale like national brands.
Yeah.
Folks have struggled to do so, and at least do so with positive reviews, right? I'm curious from your perspective, as you've hustled to build a portfolio of 45, soon to be, you know, 50 homes that are a part of your management group. Do owners care much and or know much about the quote unquote name brands? Like, have they all had bad experiences? Like, do you think there's just loads of opportunity for more boutique operators? Or do you think it's like, no, people want to trust like the name brand and they really do want to be managed by a Vacasa, right? What has been your experience, especially living in a vacation destination?
A lot of my units have come from Vacasa, I'll tell you that. okay. A lot of people are very upset with Vacasa. So Vacasa, like, you know, they got their public company. They have a lot of funding. Their marketing and their, you know, their acquisitions is on point.
Yeah.
But the logistics of their company is horrific, you know, and they're coming in and just buying these companies and relying on people that, you know, didn't build that company to run it. And in my experience, I mean, that is literally why we've exploded, is because we have that boutique brand and, you know, I'm the face of it. I'm going out and talking to people and giving them my number and they absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Because they just want to feel like they're getting that service. And it's like, you know, with Vacasa, there might be one manager the next day and then another one the next day and he's not answering for 2 weeks. And, you know, they're taking care of your property and these people want answers. And they're definitely, they're looking for more of a boutique style. And that is kind of what I've been teaching people, is more of that strategy. It definitely works as far as acquisitions.
I do feel like that boutique is having a moment again, right? Like, I feel like there are these like, you know, cycles, right? Where people really, really trust boutique, and then boutique gets big, and then people trust like the name brand, and then it's all about the name brand, and then there's too much name brand. There's the brands have gotten too big, and now like people go back to boutique, right? And I feel like now we're living in this moment where it's like, no. I actually think that a big reason for this is like COVID. A lot of people work remotely. We all just spend way more time meeting with people virtually and communicating virtually. That, like, if I have a short-term rental in a local market and I meet Cameron face-to-face and I know that you live 10 minutes from me or whatever, there's just something about that immediately gives me more trust than a name brand who, might have a local rep in the area. But I know that, like, the real decision makers, like, they're not living there. They're in New York or LA or San Fran.
They don't care.
You know? Yeah, and they don't care. You're literally a number on a spreadsheet, right?
The bottom line is the bottom line. Yeah.
Yeah, and for a lot of short-term rental hosts, right, who've had ups and downs over the last few years, right? I think some people, many people who've talked to me, anyways, have experienced some downs recently, right? And are like talking to me, asking, hey, have you heard about like, hey, I'm just not. Bookings are way down, right? Our bookings are significantly down from where they were, not, you know, just in 2021 and 2022, but even 2023. And some people are really struggling right now. And I think that in those moments, right, people look for help, number one. But then in addition to that, like, they just want somebody that they can truly trust, right? Like, they're tired of hearing like, oh, hey, you know, if you just buy this thing or just add this thing, it'll solve all your problems. At the end of the day, they're like, I want to trust my property with somebody who is going to do who I believe is going to do their utmost to treat this with the service and love and respect that it deserves. And quite frankly, I need to stop worrying about this and I can't manage the day to day anymore because it's causing me too much stress. Right. So I do feel like people like you who are experts in your local market, right, are strategically positioned to actually be quite successful over the next couple of years while we're in this sort of like boutique is cool season.
We are. Yeah. I mean, your reputation is just huge. Like, the word of mouth is, you know, the best advertising in your local market. And it's just going to spread like wildfire if you do a good job.
One of the questions that I get asked a lot from folks who are thinking about co-hosting is like, how do you know how much to pay yourself? Right. Like, what are the economics actually like shake out to, right? Because yes, you do 1.3, 1.5, 2 million in you know, top line revenue in 12 months. And that's, you know, very impressive. It looks good on social media, whatever. But like, how do you decide what to actually pay yourself? I mean, this is like the age old question of every business owner, right? Is like, how much do you pay yourself versus how much do you, you know, reinvest in the business? So how do you think about that?
Is your question, how much are we charging as a management fee, or how much am I actually paying myself out of the LLC?
Exactly that. Like, and you don't need to reveal your actual numbers unless you're comfortable doing so. But that's a big question that people have, is like, okay, great. You know, we're bringing in a million plus in revenue, but how much am I actually paying myself as the, you know, the business owner here? Like that's right. A big question that folks have.
So I'm structuring my company to, you know, eventually look good to maybe an equity partner or something like that. So I pay myself basically as an average manager, which is 60,000 a year.
Yeah.
And then I take 20% of our net profit every month to reinvest back into the company. And then whatever's left over, we'll just take, we can just own or draw.
Yeah.
And our plan for that, this is where co-hosting starts to get really cool, is, you know, all those profits are going to go into new properties.
Mm, yeah. Yeah.
To invest ourselves.
Yeah.
And eventually it's to just, you know, the co-hosting's going like this, and then, you know, we're going to start building our own portfolio and scale.
Do you think that starting out as a co-host, right, and doing what you're, you guys are basically playing like a longer game, right? You're saying, hey, let's build a co-hosting business. Let's cut our teeth on this. Let's learn what everything that we need to learn about hospitality, about short-term rental management, about, you know, homes that are positioned as short-term rentals, and what that means from an asset perspective, right, and a liability perspective, quite frankly. And now we can build our own kind of like owned portfolio. Do you think that like this route is something that like everyone who's in the co-hosting business is ultimately trying to do? Like, have you met people that are literally like, hey, I don't even care about building my own portfolio. I really just want to like make money and have a cool management company. Like, do you think you have to want to build your own portfolio in order to be like a good player in this space? I guess, like, how do you think about
it? No, definitely not. Yeah. I mean, it's up to you what you want to do with your cash at the end of the day. But if you're in this business and you believe in this business, I mean, it's good to be a leader and lead by example and just, you know, put your money where your mouth is. I mean, you're partnering with all these owners that are doing it. So if you believe in it, I mean, you're going to get all these benefits, right? Of like depreciation, the benefits you're not getting from actual co-hosting. It's going to help you out with taxes at the end of the year. So, and then not to mention, you know, cost segregation and different things of like, you know, if it's working, and then not to mention you're getting that delta of managing it yourself because you are a management company.
Yeah. I mean,
my question would be, why aren't you buying properties?
Yeah.
It would be strange to not be buying properties, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, and the reason I asked you that question is I have seen more, you know, influencer content out there about like why you don't need to build your own portfolio. You can just manage other people's as sort of like a mechanism to building like wealth. And obviously it's different, right? Cause you're not building a real estate empire yourself necessarily, but some of the messaging I feel like is like, I don't know that I would want to hire a co-host that wasn't interested in building their own portfolio because right. Then I'm like, well, hey, what's the long-term play here, right? Like the long-term play should be that you're getting really good at understanding how to manage this asset and deliver an exceptional experience to guests because you want to be able to do this yourself one day. And if that's your ultimate objective, you're going to work harder for me today. If that's not your ultimate, like, you know, objective, I just don't know if I'm going to trust that you're going to do your utmost if at the end of the day, you just want to build a cool management company. Like, it doesn't feel like you have as much skin in the game, you know? Yeah.
No, I totally agree. And I mean, all the big players I know in this industry, I mean, they not only do they manage, they own for sure. And, you know, they bring in a lot. So something I just thought in my head is like co-hosting and management can and make you rich, but owning will make you wealthy.
Mm, yeah, I like that. I like that. Yeah. You could put that on a t-shirt, man. That's good.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, you should. You should. Well, hey, man, final question.
Make you rich.
Yeah.
We'll make you wealthy.
I like it. Final question for you, man, is as you think about like the future, so you guys will hopefully be at 50 properties by the end of the year. Like, What like hot takes do you have on like travel and hospitality? Do you have anything that's like, hey, like when I think about the future of this industry, I think X is going to be true, or I strongly believe Y. And if so, what is that?
So number one, I want to just, to all the naysayers out there, I don't, and this may be biased, but you know, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
It's been around for a long time and it ain't going anywhere anytime soon. Whether that means Airbnb is going away or not, which I don't think it is. I mean, they're a powerhouse. Do I agree with everything they do? No, but they, you know, they swallow up the market share. I think everyone needs to be more focused on data. I think data is just huge.
Yeah.
And if you look at, you know, all these hedge funds are buying short-term rentals all over the country. It's like,
yeah,
those guys are a lot smarter than me and they're doing it and they're making money. So obviously it's working, right? That would be my hot take would be is to, you know, the person that controls the data is going to make a lot of money. So hold on to your data.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or if you can come up with an idea to provide people data, I mean, that's how you're going to kill it.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's really like the next wave here, right? Is like, you know, I saw a tweet the other day by somebody I really respect in the industry that was like, you know, everyone's goal when building a short-term rental empire is, or I think they specifically said everyone's goal when building an Airbnb empire is to be able to have an empire without Airbnb. And like how, like when you've made it is when you no longer like need Airbnb as like an acquisition channel. Right. Which again, I don't necessarily always, I have a lot of, you know, strong feelings about that. And I don't think that that's a strategy that will work for 90% plus people. But if that is your objective, right.
It's a good goal.
That is how it is a good goal, right? Like to build a business that's so strong and so healthy and so data backed, right? Where you can own that data, and therefore you no longer need the OTAs to be able to bring you customers because you know how to attract customers. Like you essentially can manage the full life cycle yourself.
It's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I love the creative, like I'm super, you know, a vision we have is the mountains, like A-frame cabins, glamp sites, stuff like that. Like, I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon. And I'm really interested in that. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, dude, this has been great, man. I appreciate you coming on and sharing a little bit about your story, your personal story of starting in the Coast Guard and you know, listening to audiobooks with your dad in the car about how to build wealth. And now here you are, you and your wife tag teaming to build this awesome management company. We'll have to stay in touch as you continue to grow, and would love to, you know, have you back on if you explore those you know, any unique stays. I think that there is massive opportunity there, as everyone listening knows.
We got something in the work, so I'd love to
link. Oh, cool. All right.
I'd love to link up and tell some more stories in the future.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, man. We'll have to keep you posted.
And if you're ever in Savannah, hit me up.
I will, man. Yeah, I've never been, but actually, it's one of my parents' favorite spots in like the whole world. Like, they just love Savannah, Georgia. Yeah, yeah, and I've never been, so I'll have to come down. But hey, man, thanks so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, bro. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Behind the Stays. I'd love to know what you thought of the episode. Feel free to shoot me an email directly at Zach, that's Z-A-C-H, at spontaneous.com, or find me on X, formerly Twitter, at ZBoozy, that's Z-B-O-O-Z-E-E, or on LinkedIn at Zach Boozy Cruz. If this is your first time tuning in, it's a pleasure to have you, and we hope to have you back again soon. If you've been a listener for a while, though, I'd greatly appreciate if you could subscribe and then leave us a rating and review of the show wherever you are currently streaming this podcast. Last but certainly not least, Spontaneous and Behind the Stays are totally bootstrapped, and my ability to bring you these stories is only possible because of our incredible advertising partners. We're very much a startup show, and while our growth rate is amazing, thanks to all you who keep tuning in and sharing our show with your friends and family, we haven't quote-unquote made it yet. So if you could do me a huge favor and go and check out the sponsor for today's episode in the show notes below, I would greatly appreciate it. Even if their offering doesn't make sense for you right now, sending them a quick message on social or an email, just saying that you're listening to the show and you appreciate their support would be incredibly amazing. All right, friends, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will see you on the next episode of Behind the Stays.